Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. After hearing Nilambara Chakravarti's prediction, Sachimatra and Jagannath Mishra observed the name-giving festival in great joy, inviting all the brahmanas and their wives. Purport. It is a Vedic system to observe all kinds of festivals, including birthday festivals, marriage festivals, name-giving festivals, and festivals marking the beginning of education by especially inviting brahmanas. In every festival, the brahmanas are to be fed first, and when the brahmanas are pleased, they bless the festival by chanting Vedic mantras or the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Okay. Omegyana tamarandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshum militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagarjatam Sagana Raganatam Vitam Tvam Sijivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purjana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay. Please repeat after me. After hearing Nilambara Chakravarti's prediction, Sachimata and Jagannath Mishra observed the name-giving festival in great joy, inviting all the brahmanas and their wives. Okay. So this chapter is entitled Lord Chaitanya's Childhood Pastimes. And in the previous verse, in verse number 19, a prediction is being made. In the future, this child will protect and maintain all the world. For this reason, he is to be called Vishvambara, which means the maintainer. there's a few interesting things which we can bring out from this particular verse in purport. What's the best way to do this? So, in different times in human history, as people are in different modes, their approach to things become different. In a society which is more in the lower modes, in a society which is ruled more by passion and ignorance, or who's, let's say specifically, which has an intelligence which is ruled by passion and ignorance, there are symptoms. The symptoms are that a problem is only addressed and solved when it's present in its most gross and protracted form. So consider it like someone who has an illness. So one of my friends, devotee, he's been doing yoga for many years. So he was telling me, this is an interesting point, it's a very true point. He was telling me that as he's been practicing yoga for so long, his body's very sensitive. So he can actually pick up if his body's going off balance on a very subtle level. So he picks it up on a subtle level, he can read his body. So he knows that this sign means my body's telling me I need to rest. So he just rests, and that issue, because he picked it up on a subtle level, it never becomes gross. It never gets to the point where there's a very serious illness and then he has to go to the doctor. Right? So when you have a society whose intelligence is in lower modes, a problem is only detected and it is only solved when it's fully manifest. In other words, you have a crisis, everyone can see the crisis, and then they are motivated to do something. When you have a society or an intelligence which is in the higher mode, which is in the mode of goodness, things are dealt with and they are managed on a subtle platform. So the Shastra is meant to give that type of understanding. On the platform of Dharma, things are managed subtly. Does that make some sense? So Dharma itself is a system of subtle management. So the intelligence is so much in sattva that you can understand what's going to happen before it happens. You can see the subtle elements in a situation. You can read the subtle elements in the situation. And you can manage those same subtle elements so the issue never becomes gross. So it's a form of subtle management. In this purport and in this verse, it is speaking about the brahmanas. Traditionally, this is what they were meant to provide to a society. It is a myth that just the kshatriyas are engaged in management, or rather, let's say, organization. Actually, all the different varnas are engaged in some form of organization. The shudras assist in all the forms of organization. The vaishyas, they manage and they generate the resources. The kshatriyas, they do administration, which is that they organize the people. They organize for the benefit of the people. The brahmanas are meant to organize knowledge. And that ability to organize knowledge, it allows them to advise. The act of advising is the act of organizing and applying knowledge for the benefit of others. You understand? It is a form of subtle management. Because you're able to read what's going on subtly in an individual's life and make some subtle adjustments so that the issue doesn't come up in the first place. So therefore, in Bhagavatam, I think his first canto, Prabhupada talks about the viparas. And he explains that the viparas, or the brahmanas, they would engage in things like Ayurveda, Jyotish, because it's a subtle form of management. Yeah? And there is another factor that's important to bring out here. There are many people who have an issue with anything related to Hinduism. There are many people who have an issue with anything related to Eastern culture, and one of their biggest issues is the idea of caste. The idea that you can have some kind of hierarchy or stratification of society. And they can often have a big problem with this idea. Here it's being spoken of in every festival, the brahmanas are to be fed first. My God. In modern society. You know, someone is to be fed first, but we're all equal. Right? We are all equal. Spiritually, we are all equal. Our philosophy is the principle of achintya bheda bheda tattva. That means simultaneous oneness and difference. And you will find that principle, that heartbeat, you will find that it permeates throughout the entire teachings of our tradition. So then why is it that the brahmanas are fed first? There's a very interesting thing that we see in modern society. In modern society, generally when someone is in a superior position, what do they do with that power in many cases? Abuse it. So therefore, just like you can have, let's say, hydrophobia, right, which is a fear of water, right? And you can have arachnophobia, which is a fear of spiders. You can also have a fear of hierarchy. You can have a fear of anyone being above someone else. And for an intelligent person, that is understandable. See, this is the interesting thing about intelligence. Intelligence is not actually so great. Intelligence just means that a person is very good at processing whatever information you give them. There are many people who are extraordinarily intelligent and their conclusions are incredibly stupid. Why? It is because the intelligence, the processing power is great. But the information that they are using to process, that is where the issue lies. And you find this very amazing point. When you read Prabhupada's books, if you actually go deep into what he's saying, everything he says has phenomenal, profound meaning. Prabhupada speaks about how the materialistic individual is suffering and has misperception due to their poor fund of knowledge. You remember that term? He says, due to their poor fund of knowledge. In many cases, it's not that they're unintelligent. Materially, in many cases, they're more intelligent than the devotees, materially. In many cases, not in all cases. But they just do not have all the relevant information. So for example here, you will be forgiven for thinking that this can lead to a very puffed up position. There's this festival that's going on. It talks about how the Brahmanas would be to be fed first. What happens in spiritual society, what happens in the transcendental culture, is that actually the people in the junior position are always in the more powerful position. Right? The people in the senior position, if they're actually qualified, they have more control. But the junior people have more power because they are on the receiving end of the blessings of the people above them. So the purport is that when the Brahmins are fed first, actually what's happening is the people who are feeding those Brahmins, they are receiving extraordinary blessings. You understand? So there is a natural safeguard in the spiritual system. If someone is meant to be in a senior position, if they are actually senior and you serve them, you gain more than they have. You see the point? So the Brahmanas have a certain potency. This is called Brahma Tejas. That potency comes because of their austerity. Right? So this is in terms of natures. Someone who's actually a Brahmana, not someone who's Brahminical, that's different. There's a difference between being Brahminical and being a Brahmana. Someone who's actually a Brahmana, their psychophysical nature is such that they will naturally lean towards performing austerities. Because of their natural leaning towards performing austerities, that will naturally generate in such a person a certain potency. This is called Brahma Tejas. So when you serve such a person, the potency that they have blesses the individual who serves them. Do you understand? So it's that they serve first, and the act of serving them first actually means that you benefit. And that process, or that parallel, that is found in our relationship with Krishna. That is found in our relationship with Krishna. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gaurita Guru Parampara Srila Prabhupada Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Prabhupada has explained in Krishna book. He says that the gopis, they relish hundreds of thousands of millions of times more than the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Interesting. That means that the devotee, the position of the devotee, is actually transcendentally superior even to the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is it that the devotee experiences that the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself cannot experience? The thing that the devotee experiences that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can't experience is exactly what it's like to relish the sweetness of serving Krishna. You understand? Krishna can't experience the sweetness of relishing himself from the outside. You understand? Just like you will understand that you can't really understand. You cannot really understand why someone loves you. Because you're the receiver of that affection. You understand? In order for you to fully comprehend why someone loves you, you would have to be experiencing what it's like to serve you from the outside. You'd have to have a different position, a different perspective on yourself in order to fully relish and understand why is it that people appreciate or love serving or interacting with me. So there is a blind side in that experience. And that blind side is that gap is what the devotee experiences, and that is the same thing that Krishna himself cannot experience. But of course, Krishna is very intelligent. So he realizes, I can't, this is the thing that I can't quite get. So therefore, let me come as Lord Chaitanya. Let me come Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam. Let me come as my own topmost devotee to see what I'm missing out on in serving Krishna. So there is this parallel. Whenever someone, if they're proper, is in a superior position and you serve them, you gain more than they actually have. You actually gain more. So this is the natural synergy that takes place. Now we mentioned that there is a distinction between being a Brahmana and being Brahminical. So we know that there are these different varnas. But we also know Kalo Shudra Sambhava. That in Kali Yuga, everyone is Shudra or less. Right? That means that even though you have the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, in Kali Yuga, every single nature moves downwards. Right? It leans down. Because in Kali Yuga, every nature leans down towards the Shudra platform. Now, what happens in our society is the opposite. No matter what a particular individual's varna, everyone's nature moves up. Because no matter what their varna, they are leaning towards a Brahminical. Right? Because of the activities that we do. The deity worship, the hearing philosophy. So whatever nature an individual has, it leans them up towards the Brahminical platform, no matter what their particular nature. So everyone is meant to play their particular role. And this is extraordinarily interesting. Here in this verse, it says, after hearing Nilambara Chakravarti's prediction. So he predicted the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and also named him. Therefore, for this reason, he is to be called Vishvamba. So within our tradition also, you can predict what's going to happen. If you understand the teachings properly and deeply, by just observing what is happening in the moment, you can predict the future from the present. Okay? Through the eyes of Shastra, deep spiritual vision, you can see the elements which are present at the moment. You can see which things are in line with Shastra, which things go against Shastra, and you can therefore predict what will happen as over time, if things remain as they are. So this was a special blessing of understanding Dharma. Because the future is just a projection of the present. It is just a projection of the present. So we have a huge gift that we don't use. We have a huge gift that we don't use. And there are a number of reasons why we don't use it. But if you understand the teachings properly, you can see if something is dharmic or if it is adharmic. If the elements of Dharma are present, then they create a trajectory. Just like if the mode of goodness is present, it creates a trajectory. If the mode of goodness is present, the trajectory is given by Krishna. It begins like nectar, it begins like poison and ends like nectar. That's the trajectory of the mode. If it's passion, it begins like what? Like nectar and ends like poison. That's the trajectory of passion. So just by understanding what elements are present, you can predict what's going to happen in the future. It is a form of subtle vision. So in a society which has an intelligence in the mode of passion and ignorance, they don't even see a problem until it's protracted. There's a very interesting example to illustrate this. So in Ramayana, there's a certain point where they are reciting the glories of Agastya Muni, and then they explain one pastime. So, and we will go through this together because it brings out some really amazing points. So it is explained that when Indra was fighting Vritasura, the demigods were very worried, right? Because they are intelligent. They were very worried. They noticed that this person who has the form of a demon, Vritasura had the form of a demon, but they were intelligent enough to also observe his character. What did they notice about his character? What kind of qualities did he have? He had divine qualities. So the moment they noticed that, they were worried. Because they considered that no matter what happens, there's going to be some issue. He's got the form of a demon, but he actually has the qualities which are divine. Which is more important, the qualities or the form? The qualities. So they understood, look, if Indra loses, then the demon actually has won, and we've got no king. But in one sense, if Indra kills this person, it's even worse. Because then it means that he's killed someone who's got divine qualities. Is that auspicious or inauspicious? Incredibly inauspicious. So that's why they were worried. They understood some principles of Dharma. If you kill someone who's got divine qualities, this is incredibly inauspicious. It will lead to some kind of negative ramifications. And Shastra explained that that's exactly what happened. So soon after Vritasura was killed, Indra lost his effulgence. Right? And actually, it came to a point where he could no longer maintain his position of leadership. He went into hiding. Right? So you can see this point. The demigods, they were very intelligent. They knew that actually what makes something work is actually piety or Dharma. Right? Dharma has different meanings, but the meanings of Dharma are not equal. There are primary and there are secondary meanings. You see, the primary meanings are that which sustains something or the inherent nature of something. The secondary meanings are the rules and regulations. Because the rules and regulations are born of the nature of something. Right? So for example, if you have something which is explosive, then how should you deal with it? Carefully. You see the point? So first you understand the nature of it. This is explosive, it's volatile, and then the rule comes from the nature. Because it's volatile, therefore you have to deal with it carefully. You understand? So you first, so there's even that approach. You first understand the nature of something, and then the rule follows from the nature. Right? So something is flammable, therefore the rule is you have to keep it away from fire. So the primary meaning. So Dharma is that which sustains something, is that which creates auspicious results. So they understood, this is inauspicious. He's killed the demon, therefore no matter what, this is adharmic. So there's going to be negative fallout as a result. And he lost his effulgence, he fell from his position. So then the demigods were concerned. Okay, so now we've got no king. What are we going to do? We need to find someone to take that position. They searched for someone, interestingly enough, they searched for someone who had done penances, austerities, charity, and who therefore had what? From that he would have piety. They found a human being called Nehusha, someone who had tremendous piety, and he was given the position of Indra. Okay? So what does that tell us about piety and position? What's the connection between piety and position? Any ideas? It is by piety that one gains a higher situation. Right? It's not because one's crafty in all these things. Even if someone is crafty, it is actually only their piety that still allows them to get a certain position. There's loads of crafty people. The world is full of crafty people who get nothing. Right? So sometimes people think that someone's being crafty, but they gain something. No, it's the craftiness, it's the previous piety which allowed them to gain something. But now they're so stupid, they're being crafty, and you'll see what will happen to them in the future. You see, because there's always a time lag. So Nehusha ascended to the position of Indra. But Nehusha, he wasn't qualified in mentality. So after he attained the position of Indra, he became intoxicated and he wanted to enjoy with Indrani, who is the queen of Indra, who is Indra's wife. But Indrani was very intelligent. She was very intelligent in politics. So when Nehusha declared that he wanted to enjoy with her, she considered that it would be unwise to immediately reject his proposal. So she went to Brihaspati for advice. So what is Brihaspati's position? He's the guru of the demigods, right? He's a Brahmin. Brihaspati told her something very interesting. He gave her some advice. He told her, he said, it is by one's piety that one ascends to a higher position. And he said, it is also by one's impiety that one falls down into a lower position. And then he gave her some advice. This is how you can, because he had studied the nature of Nehusha. And he said, therefore, you should say this to him. So Indrani, she approached Nehusha and she communicated with Nehusha. She said, okay, I will enjoy with you, right? I will enjoy with you, but on one condition. You have to come to my place. You have to come to see me carried on a palanquin by the greatest sages in the world. Okay? So I will enjoy with you, but you have to approach me. You have to come to my place, to my abode, carried on a palanquin by the greatest sages in the world. So Nehusha was so mad to enjoy with this Indrani. So he organized like this. He got the greatest sages in the world to carry him on a palanquin to the place of Indrani in order to enjoy. Now the sages, their body is built for austerity, but it's not built for physical labor like that. So they were very slow. First of all, they were disgusted by the proposal. They were completely disgusted by the proposal, but they considered, he's the king of heavens, right? So, you know, we're citizens of the kingdom. Even though it's crazy what he's doing, they obliged. But because of the kind of body they had, they were moving very slowly. And Nehusha, maddened in the mode of passion to enjoy with this Indrani, because he was so impatient to enjoy, he started prodding the sages, shouting, Sarpa, Sarpa, which means faster, faster. Right? He was prodding them to move faster so he could come to enjoy. And at one point, Agastya Muni became angry. And then he cursed Nehusha. Just as Nehusha was saying, Sarpa, Sarpa, which means faster, faster. Sarpa also means what? Serpent. He cursed him immediately to become a snake. Brihaspati was very intelligent. Brihaspati had studied the nature of this Nehusha, and he also knew what was going on and how to defeat him, because he knew the root cause of something. So when the intelligence is in a higher mode, you can work out the subtle cause of something. So if you arrange things on the subtle platform, the issue never even comes up on a gross physical level. That is why the Brahmins will teach Ayurveda and things like that, because it's a form of subtle management. Yeah, so you've got this kind of body, you eat these types of foods, you have this kind of lifestyle, you'll never get sick. Or if you get sick, even when it's coming up in a subtle form, you just manage it in this way, it never even comes as a gross physical illness. That's really intelligent. That's the kind of intelligence you just don't even see in the modern world. That's our tradition. and when someone is even more intelligent. When the intelligence isn't in goodness, when the intelligence is in Vishuddha Sattva, then instead of dealing with the subtle causes, then you have an intelligence like Srila Prabhupada. Instead of dealing with the subtle causes, you deal with the Sarvakaranakaranam. You deal with the cause of all causes. Prabhupada has come and analyzed what is the root cause of all their problems. As long as they have this material body and as long as they're in this material world, they're going to suffer. Let's get them out of the prison, full stop. It is the difference between making the life of a homeless person bearable, right? So if someone is homeless, they've got a cardboard box, you give them a little bit of food, you know, you come and see them once a week. You're trying to make the situation bearable. But someone who's more intelligent, they understand, hold on, isn't your father a multimillionaire? What are you doing living rough on the streets? Why don't you come with me? We'll take you back home. That's one activity dealing with all the other issues. You don't need to upgrade the cardboard box. You don't need to come once a week and feel that you're doing so much for charity, so much for society. You just take the person back home. You just remind them who they're related to. You just do that one act of taking them back home. Everything else is taken care of. That is intelligence on the platform of Vishuddha Sattva. So to be honest, you will see as devotees, often our intelligence isn't also in goodness either. There is a myth that is often held by devotees in our movement about how Krishna consciousness works. It is based upon a misunderstanding of the Shastra. The holy name, because this purport talks about how the Brahmanas would be pleased and they'd bless the festival by chanting Vedic mantras or the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The holy name does everything. Huh? The holy name does everything. But the question you have to ask yourselves is, do you chant the holy name? The holy name does absolutely everything, but do you chant the real holy name? When someone chants the real holy name, or even chants holy name with depth, what happens is this. It has such profound effect on you that holy name, which is inherently of the nature of the Vishuddha Sattva, it has such a profound effect on you that it transforms everything of your consciousness. That means just as the holy name is Vishuddha Sattva, it rapidly, like a magnet. So you have some metal that you're holding onto or wearing, and you have a magnet above you, and because you have that metal content, and the magnet's very strong, it will immediately pull you up. You understand? So the holy name, it doesn't lose its quality, and it doesn't actually change its position. So the holy name being of the topmost quality and being on the topmost position, when you chant it properly, it's not that the holy name comes down, you go up. Specifically, your consciousness goes up. Even if you are on the platform of ignorance, but you chant the holy name sincerely, it rapidly pulls you up through ignorance. You don't jump. It pulls you up through ignorance, through passion, through goodness, and brings you to the Vishuddha Sattva platform. But that, for most devotees, is a gradual process. You understand? For most devotees, it's a gradual process. Now, if you got there rapidly, then think about this. Let's say you didn't get to Vishuddha Sattva completely, but you rapidly came to goodness, and you're still en route. Right, you're moving through goodness at this point in your spiritual life. You're moving through from goodness to Vishuddha Sattva by practicing Krishna consciousness. Now, a person who is practicing Krishna consciousness from the platform of goodness, what kind of effect would that have upon the way that they live their lives? Any ideas? Yes. You'd be illuminated, therefore it would naturally incline you to organize the different areas of your life in a more sattvic way. It would be done wisely. It would be done with knowledge. It would be balanced. Because not because you yourself are necessarily an expert in every area of life. It's just because your consciousness is so strongly in goodness that it spills over into everything that you do. You understand? Now, are most devotees chanting the holy name in such a deep way? Yes or no? No. So what happens is now this. You have a devotee, they're very sincere, but they're still moving through the modes. They're moving through to Vishuddhasattva, definitely. But they're moving from a platform to a platform. Right? Just because you wear tilak and wear a sari or dhoti, it does not mean that you are automatically 100% transcendental. If you didn't work that out by now, you need to wake up. Right? You are moving to the platform of transcendence from whatever platform you have begun on. Right? You are not immediately fully 100% transcendental. If you study your consciousness, you will see sometimes you are still affected by different modes. Right? So now you have a devotee who's very sincere. They're chanting. They're moving through the modes. But while they're moving through the modes, are they still having to live in this world? Yes or no? Yes. Now, if they don't take higher guidance in terms of how they manage the different areas of their life, what will determine the mode in which they manage the different areas of their life? What will determine that? Their consciousness. Unless they take advice from the Shastra. So what the Shastra does is the Shastra says, I don't really care what mode you're in. I know you're a sadhaka. I know that you are moving through the modes to come to the transcendental platform. So I'm going to help you out. I'm going to give you a shortcut. If you were at goodness or Siddhasattva, it would be so strong in your consciousness that you wouldn't be able to help but to organize every area of your life in that mode. But I know that for many of you, you're not going to be in that mode. So I'm going to do what? I'm going to tell you how to organize your life according to the mode of goodness, even though you're not actually in the mode of goodness. You understand? I'm going to tell you how to eat, how someone in the mode of goodness eats, even though you, by your own mode, are not naturally inclined to eat like this. I'm going to tell you how to choose a partner, right? In the mode of goodness, even though you, by your nature, because your nature isn't in the mode of goodness, if you were choosing a partner, you just look out for whoever's looking hot. Right? I'm going to tell you what type of career you should have according to understanding your nature in the mode of goodness, even though I know that because by nature you're not in the mode of goodness, you would just look for the thing that gives you the most prestige or earns you the most money. And then you'd hate your job afterwards. And then you turn around and you think, why is Krishna doing this to me? I'm such a sincere devotee. Sound familiar? Okay. So what Krishna does is he gives you the shortcut. So he knows that this is a process. He knows that we are sadhakas. There are Vaishnavas and there are sadhakas. In many places in the Shastra where Prabhupada is talking about devotees, in many instances, he says the devotees are callous to the condition of the physical body. Right? You've heard that comment by Prabhupada before? Now you tell me, are you callous to the condition of your material body? Yes or no? No. Right? You know, there's some devotees, where if they get a flu or a cold, you know, they think that, you know, it's literally, they think they're about to leave their body, you know? And they wonder how they're going to chant, like, you know, hurry, quick, you know. So what that means is, yes, the devotee is completely callous to the condition of their physical body. For that's the devotee. That means the pure devotee. For the sadhaka, there's a different statement. So Prabhupada is using the different terms differently, and then you have the statements of the acharyas which combine the two. So Prabhupada says for the devotee, they're callous to the condition of the body. He says for the sadhaka, they should take care of the body en route to transcendence. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, unless one is a Paramahamsa. right? So therefore, he then differentiates, what type of devotee are you? So if you're a Paramahamsa, then you'll fall into the category of devotee that Prabhupada is speaking about here, callous to the material body. If you're a sadhaka, then he says, unless one's a Paramahamsa, so you're a practicing devotee, one has to have good care for the body in order so it doesn't become a disturbance. You don't go into overcare. You don't overdo it, where it's all about the body and no service, no devotion, no sadhana. And you don't underdo it, where you're so sick now, and you can't, and you struggle to serve, and then you think, well, but Prabhupada said the devotee is callous to the body. I didn't sleep at all. I just stayed up all night to serve. I did that for a few years. I don't understand why I'm ill, because Prabhupada said, after all. Yeah, but he wasn't talking about your level of devotion. He was speaking about a different level of devotee. So you have to be very careful to understand which statements in the Shastra are meant for you to actually practice, because there's some statements in the Shastra which are meant for the neophyte devotee. So this point that we were making, 8th Canto, Chapter 2, Text Number 30, Gajendra Moksha. Prabhupada in that purport says one has to keep position oneself, one has to have good care for the health, etc., to fight Maya for a position of strength. That's for the sadhaka. And then in another place, he'll talk about the devotee being callous to the material body. That's for the Paramahamsa. So which statement actually applies to you? You follow that. The statements which apply to those who are more advanced than you, that is for you to aspire towards and to be inspired by. One day we will be at the platform where we will be callous to the situation of the material body. Srila Prabhupada was being examined. You okay? Okay. His body was being examined by one doctor. And the doctor said to him, he said, there are so many things wrong with your body that you should be screaming or howling in pain. Right? But this is the position of a Paramahamsa. This is real Paramahamsa. Interestingly enough, Prabhupada said to one devotee, he said, do not try to be more of a Paramahamsa than me. Interesting, isn't it? Do not try to be more of a Paramahamsa than me. Yeah, Prabhupada sleeps 2 hours a day, translating books, organizing an entire worldwide movement. Can you sleep 2 hours a day? You understand? You get the point. So the Shastra will give you how to organize your life in the mode of goodness, because in those areas, it will. If you do it in the mode of goodness, it will be sustainable. It will become fixed. Therefore, those areas of your life won't harass you while you're trying to move from whatever position you're in to transcendence. Right? So do you see the difference? But what devotees often do is we neglect what's advised about lifestyle. We do the sadhana, but we're chanting namaparad. Therefore, the consciousness is still in a lower mode. Therefore, the way we organize our lives is based upon the mode that we are in. And when things fall apart or become difficult, who gets the blame? Krishna. Now, this is very interesting. Because in this purport, I was meditating on this. It says here, after hearing Nilambara Chakravarti's prediction, Sachimata and Jagannath Mishra observed the name-giving festival in great joy. In great joy. It's very interesting. If you do an analysis of some of our most popular speakers in our movement, including our seniors, often it's a very joyous event. You know, they'll tell jokes. I was thinking, I don't tell any jokes in any classes. You know? I need to rebrand. I need to, anyway, that's a whole other story. We'll get into that another time. But the point is that I was meditating on this. There's something very profound here. Most of the world, most of the people, and unfortunately, most of the devotees outside of the joyous festivals that we have, what is life really like? Let's not talk about it theoretically. What is life like for most people on this planet right now? Easy or hard? Hard. Hard. You get this kind of honeymoon period where you're studying, okay? Because you actually aren't doing anything full time. You understand? Yeah? I was talking to the Pandav Center about that afterwards. And you can say, yeah, we're going to spread Krishna consciousness. Wow, I'm going to take over the world. And I was just like thinking, yeah, because you're in university. Calm down, okay? You know, you're in university. So it's like, for the average person, there's a 40-hour week or more, right? And for the usual university student, it comes down to about an 8-hour week, okay? So this, yeah, we're going to spread out the movement. We're going to take over the world. Yeah, you know, okay, when you get a full-time job, then it's like, okay, you know, like that. It's something very different. Life is hard. Life is hard. The truth is, for many people, life is a struggle, and it's a bewildering struggle. So one of the reasons why there's such a big thing for motivation is because, and entertainment. And it's not just one particular nature, it's the entire world. As we said, everything is pulled towards the Shudra nature, right? And there's nothing wrong with Shudras, by the way. Most people are Shudras, right? So if you have an issue with that, you have an issue with everyone on the planet, by the way. Yeah? It's just to be really clear. So life on this world is really difficult. So people need to laugh, they need some joy. So these festivals, one of the reasons for these festivals is to have that joyful event where people feel that inspiration, where there's a samskar, but it's not just a samskar. These festivals, these mahotsavas, they would leave a samskar, but it's a positive samskar. I remember speaking to someone, and they were a devotee who grew up in the movement, and they were speaking about other devotees who grew up in the movement and how sometimes, unfortunately, and it doesn't happen, hopefully it doesn't happen anymore. Sometimes if that young person did something wrong, as a punishment, they were made to stand in the corner, and guess what they were meant to do? Chant. Yeah, absolutely crazy. So what you've now done is you've created a negative trigger. So what happens is every time that, and so what happened was this devotee was telling me, therefore, that relative of hers, now they just can't chant japa, they can do kirtan. Interesting. Because generally with kirtans, what kind of emotions are associated with kirtan? Joyous emotions. Right? So the emotions are important in Krishna consciousness. So that person, as a punishment, if they did something wrong, they were told to stand in the corner and chant. So now you've created this negative samskar. So even though they want to chant, in the back of their mind, it's just, no, it's a punishment, it's negative, so they couldn't do it. Or they struggled to do it. So we have to be very careful in our spiritual life to do things in a way that keeps the positive connection to Krishna. Because he is inherently positive. And you will feel inherently positive towards him as long as you practice your spiritual life properly. Yeah? Because it is easy to misperceive what's going on in spiritual life. And to be honest, it happens most of the time. And this is one example, as we said. If you manage your life according to your own material conception, then when your situation, your work, or something external goes difficult, usually a devotee who doesn't know this distinction, they usually think, but I'm such a nice devotee, I come to the temple, I wear tilak, I even tolerate that other devotee who really annoys me, I chant Hare Krishna, why is Krishna doing this to me? It's not Krishna doing it to you. It is that in the area of sadhana you're following, but in the area of lifestyle, you did something else. There is a recommendation in all areas. You understand? When you are more in sattva, it will spill over. You will tend to do everything in goodness. But let's be real. If you're not in sattva, there's recommended ways to do certain things. We were in Goloka Dham, and they asked us to give some classes. So we were making a point, and it's very interesting. So we were quoting from the Brihat Parashurahora Shastra. Brihat Parashurahora Shastra, because it talks about natures. Parashurahora Shastra is given by Parashuramuni. Who's Parashuramuni? He's the father of who? Exactly. So he's authoritative. He says in terms of marriage that the husband and wife have to have equal nature. And Prabhupada says that also in third canto of Bhagavatam. He said if they don't, then the husband's nature must be superior to the wife's. He said if they're not of equal nature, then it must be the case that the husband's nature is superior to the wife. He said otherwise there'll be bitterness and resentment. Right? So in a world where everyone has a false conception about what it means to be equal, we are equal spiritually. But it doesn't mean we have the same natures. You understand? But you can't get this just by observing. You can't get this just by externals because you won't know what to look for. So you need some superior perspective to understand. So when you have a superior vision, which is the vision of the Shastra, then the Shastra, the Dharma, actually shows you how things really work. So also Prabhupada, another thing he said is, generally it's recommended that, again, the husband is superior to the wife in some way. It can be age, it means specifically maturity, because then her mind's peaceful, his mind is peaceful. And if their mind is peaceful, then how does it affect your chanting? If your mind is peaceful, how does it affect your ability to take the sadhana? Easier or harder? Exactly. So in the sadhaka state, your material situation can also play into your ability to practice spiritual life. Because if the mind is peaceful, paramatma samahita. For one whose mind is controlled, the super soul is already reached, Krishna says. In the paramahamsa state, no one cares about your material situation. At the same time, we have karma. So therefore, if you end up in a certain material situation, you still have to use it in a way which is spiritually progressive. You understand? So whatever state you come across, you have to use it to the best possible effect. But there are recommendations in the Shastra about how to do things. So if you don't know, try to understand how to do things. Don't make the mistake that most devotees do. Most devotees, we follow the Shastra in the area of sadhana only. But you're not living full-time doing sadhana only. You understand? So that means that in other areas of life, you're often following according to your material idea. And then if those other areas of life are being done in lower modes, then they can be the areas in which Maya is just coming in and just knocking you for six. And because you don't know, it comes back to the same thing. But I'm a devotee. I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I even gave some money to the temple. Why is Prabhupada doing this to me? Do you see the difference? Yeah? So try to live your life in a way which is spiritually joyous. There are recommendations about lifestyle. It is very funny. In the outside world, they understand natures and all these things. They, even in my workplace, because we do leadership and management training, they're so quick. They train the leaders in understanding their natures and understanding the natures of their employees, just to squeeze more productivity out of them and to retain them. Right? So it's funny, in the outside world, they get it from perception. They've just tried to look and observe, and you have a few quick people who are a bit sharp and trying to work out, why is this person successful? What are they doing? And they work out, oh, they're doing things that they've got a natural talent for. We'll use that to make money. Right? They're doing it from that point of view. Therefore, what they're doing isn't the complete picture. You have this, you have the complete understanding. See, this is the other thing about the brahmanas, right? If the brahmanas are given that capacity to do what they're meant to do, everyone benefits. There is a myth that you can only learn from someone who's achieved something. That is one of the biggest mythologies in the modern world. Because if they're trained, the brahmana can understand how to do something better than the person who can do it. Right? There is the science of something and there is the execution of something. And again, because people in the modern world and because modern life and intelligence is in the mode of passion and ignorance, they confuse the two. As long as an individual is in the lower mode, you can't actually see reality. It doesn't matter how brilliant or intelligent you are. You can't see reality unless you have two things, sattva or spiritual understanding and spiritual knowledge, right? So the brahmana understands the science of something, but for example, the brahmana, like Dronacharya, he will understand the science of kshatriya activity, okay? But there'll be the other kshatriyas, like the Pandavas, if they've got more of a kshatriya nature, they'll be better at executing the science than the brahmana who understands the science. Do you understand? So he will learn the science and teach the science, but they have the mentality to execute it. Because to execute something, you need to have the theory and you need to have the certain characteristics which allow you to apply the theory. Okay? Do you see the difference? So it's not enough to not have the knowledge of something. You have to have the knowledge of it and the nature that allows you to apply the knowledge. That is why the world is full of MBAs. And they're all working for someone else who's got no MBA whatsoever and who's making a lot more money than they are. Yeah? Because the person who's hiring the MBAs is a natural Vaishya. So he or she has the mentality to apply the science of making money. And they use the MBA students to execute, to assist them in doing it. The MBA student learned all about it, but he or she can't apply it in the way that the Brahman, in the way that the natural Vaishya can. So the Brahmanas, if they actually require a certain lifestyle, because in order to learn and in order to organize knowledge and to gain insight from knowledge, you can't do it in the mode of passion or ignorance. They have to actually have a peaceful lifestyle. So the moment you make the brahmanas run around, their ability to learn and to teach actually goes down. Therefore, the head can't actually give more to everyone else. So now, if the brahmanas were allowed to practice in the sattvic way, they could empower everyone else. Because they would be able to learn the science of kshatriya leadership and give the kshatriyas, this is how you do it even better than you can do it normally. Because otherwise, the kshatriyas will learn it by trial and error. They'll have the nature to learn it, so they'll learn it faster than the other varnas, but they'll still make all kinds of mistakes en route. So all those mistakes means that everyone else has to suffer. You've seen that. You have a bad leader, he can be the most well-intentioned person, but he's just learning it from trial and error, and he's sharper because he's got the nature, so he picks it up. The nature means that you're sensitive to those particular elements. So because he has a kshatriya nature, he's very sensitive to anything around leadership. He picks it up and thinks about it all the time, which means he picks it up faster than others, but he's still not picking it up as fast as the kshatriya would give it. Right? Same thing with the Vaishyas. If the Brahmanas knew the art of making money, the Brahmanas would be millionaires. The Vaishyas would be millionaires in no time. You want to make money? Just do this, this, and this. Right? Because that's how it works. So we are interdependent. So when each person is able to do what they're meant to do, everyone else flourishes. Because it means that their activity benefits everyone. If the Vaishyas are allowed to make money, everyone gets more resources. You understand? If the Kshatriyas are allowed to do administration, everyone gets protection. So it's an interdependent system. Anyway, those are a few thoughts on these points. So we want to understand that unless you're in the higher mode, what you're seeing about the world isn't really the world. You see the externals, but you don't see the heartbeat. You don't see the thing that's making the situation work. I'll end with one example. So I was in one job, and one of my colleagues, nice person, she was talking, and she's in her 20s. She was telling me about how her and her father have such a wonderful relationship. And I was laughing because I see so many devotees, the parents and the children don't have a great relationship. Right? So I remembered what Prabhupada said. Prabhupada would often quote Chanakya. He says about the stages of development of a child. 0 to 5, you treat them like a king. 5 to 15, he says, you make them work, you make them responsible. 16 onwards, you treat them like a friend, right? And that's actually from child psychology. That's in the Shastra explaining about the psychology of children and what they need at different ages. So I was listening to this girl who's in her early 20s talking about how she has a great relationship with her father. And I remembered what Prabhupada said. This is the other thing about Shastra check shoes. If you learn the principles in the Shastra, then you will start to see the world differently. You will look at any situation and you'll be able to see, oh my God, that's what Prabhupada said. So you remember the pure devotees. Every time you remember the pure devotees with gratitude, a certain percentage of that pure devotee's qualities will enter into your own consciousness and character. Right? That is the benefit of always remembering Krishna and all his pure devotees. So I said to my colleague, I said, when you were in your teens, I said, how did your father treat you when you were in your teen years? And she said, you know what? You know, when I was in my mid to late teens, my father treated me like a friend. Yeah? She said, because he treated me like a friend, because he treated me like an adult, a young adult, therefore I still liked him. And I remained kind of open. And because he had that friendship, then it was like talking to a friend. An older friend, a wiser friend. And therefore, the relationship just kept on flourishing. So that's in our Shastra. But do the devotees follow what's in our own tradition? Yes, in terms of sadhana. No, in terms of everything else. Always bear in mind that at the time of Prabhupada, most of the devotees lived in the temple. So they could get away with not following the lifestyle aspects. Because it was full-time service and full-time sadhana. Now, do most of the devotees live in the temple? Yes or no? Is most of your daily life spent practicing sadhana? Yes or no? Is most of your daily life spent practicing direct service? Be honest, yes or no? No. So therefore, you need to understand these things. Otherwise, to be honest, what I see is Maya just really knocking the devotees for six, and they can't even see the punches. They can't even see where the punch is coming from. They don't even know where they're being destabilized. And it comes back to the same thing. Oh, but I'm a devotee. I'm practicing so hard. I'm trying. I'm so sincere. You know, why is Prabhupada, why is Krishna doing this to me? Doesn't he understand how sincere I am? No, he understands exactly how sincere you are. But there are some other things that we may not be practicing so expertly. Yeah? So we want to have our spiritual life practiced in a joyous way. We follow the instructions in sadhana, but we also try to live the other areas of our lives in a sattvic way also. And that will help everything to flourish. I guarantee you, if we just deal these with everything wisely, you'll see an explosion in this movement. You'll see that with no increase in effort, more will be achieved, more preaching will be done, and the transcendental effects of your sadhana will go through the roof. Because you'll be practicing your sadhana now without a disturbed mind, and the mind won't be disturbed because your life will be on the platform of sattva, which is more balanced and more stable. Yeah? There is the focus and there is the foundation. Our blind side as a movement is that we're very clear on the focus. Every devotee is focused on Anandamoy. You're trying to reach a transcendental platform. But what we often miss is the foundation. What is the platform that you're standing on when you're trying to reach Anandamoy? If you're on a stable platform, it's easy to focus. If the platform you're standing on is always unsteady, then even though you're trying to focus, you keep finding that you're unstable, you're shaky, and therefore it's harder to hit the target. So Maya's very clever. This is the blind side that most of us have. We think that because we're practicing, that therefore everything about our lives is automatically transcendental. It's not. Just in case you didn't know, it's not. So please, please, please organize your life in such a way that it's stable. And stable means different things to different people. And this is why also it gets difficult. Because if someone has very simple Brahminical nature and has a very tolerant nature or is very trained or has been brought up in a very austere way, everything can be austere and very simple, it's not going to affect their mind. But if you have a different nature, then that's too austere for you, but although it's austere enough for them. Do you understand? Yeah? So then you look at their situation, you say, but they've got a very austere thing and they're doing well. Yes, because they've got a different nature, they can get away with that. I had one devotee, and it was just, I could see, it wasn't his fault. But he just didn't understand his nature. And he was talking about how devotees need to do more and that he does so much and he's making all these sacrifices. And I was looking at his body. I saw his body was pitta kapha, right? So the kapha in the body allows people to do austerity, to be more physically austere. The pitta in the body gives a lot of energy, right? So that pitta kapha nature means that he can go on less sleep, and for him, it's not a problem. So he thinks the other devotees are lazy. No, he's doing what he's doing according to his physical capacity. Now you try and get someone with a vata body to do the same thing, they'll fall apart. Because the body isn't the same. This is our impersonalism. Because we don't understand that you have different physical, mental capacities. But Krishna doesn't care about your physical or mental capacities. He just wants you to do your best. You understand? Have you got the point? He just wants you to do your best. So when devotees stop being impersonal and understand that what's different people have different natures and different capacities, then we will no longer have a movement of people who are insecure and have low self-esteem because they're comparing themselves to the wrong thing. And then we'll have people who will just try to be the best to do what they can actually do in Krishna's service. You understand? And then that way the movement will explode. It will come. It will happen. But we can make that happen faster by starting to use our intelligence. There's no excuse for being stupid in Krishna consciousness and then blaming Krishna. Yeah? We have to understand, what can we do? First thing is we want to please Krishna and then do what you can do to please Krishna and make sure, be very careful to encourage others in what they can do. Not what you like, not what you find pleasing, not what will get you the most prestige. That has to stop also. But try to encourage people in what they can actually do for Krishna. And then the movement of Srila Prabhupada will explode. I guarantee you. Just that one switch, every single devotee and the movement as a whole will be able to have at least 100 times more effect. At least. And that will be done with more joy. People will be happier, and it will feel like it's no effort whatsoever. Huh? Because, for example, if you have a Vaishya, making money for the Vaishya, it's not effort. They dream of making money, right? Just like people count sheep, they count money, okay? If you allow the Brahmins to teach, they love teaching. They're always thinking about the knowledge anyway. Okay, so use that for everyone else's benefit. The Kshatriyas, they like to administrate. But you have to then bring about that culture. Okay. So we'll stop there because I've gone over time. I think they should have breakfast. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Janita Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.